When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is sponsored by Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia. Upcoming featured entertainment includes The Steel Woods on April 26th and Little River Band on May 3rd. Details and tickets at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Hip-hop legend Chuck D of Public Enemy visits the Weinberg Center in Frederick, Maryland tonight for the Frederick Speaker Series. He joined me to preview the event and reflect on Public Enemy's biggest hits from Fight the Power to Rebel Without a Pause, Don't Believe the Hype, and Shut 'Em Down. Hey, Chuck D, hey, thank you so much for joining us on WTOP in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
It's such an honor to talk to you because, you know, the legend of Public Enemy here, you're about to bum rush the show tonight at Weinberg Center in Frederick, Maryland, which is actually where I live. So welcome to Frederick. I guess I should start there. You just got into town, last night? Have you gotten to walk around the cool little downtown at all yet?
I've been through Frederick before. You know, it's the United States of America. All is good.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, we can't wait to have you there. I mean, I think I saw you in Public Enemy at 930 Club in DC. Well, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, but that was a concert. And tonight is not a concert. This is part of the Frederick Speaker Series. But, you know, man, your lyrics have always been political. You know, you often open your songs with, you know, some speeches by famous Black leaders. So do you sort of view the Speaker Series as just sort of like a natural extension of what you've always done?
Yeah, I've been on the Speaker Series since 1991. I don't do it full time or off tour like I did, but I pick spots and, you know, and I make sure that I'm able to get across to people, you know, who want to check out arts and culture, you know, the importance of arts and culture and how detailed it could be to make change in the world. So I'm an artist. I released 5 books last year. I do Naphic Grovels. I write music, I guide musicians, and I salute to people in the culture because it brings human beings together for our similarities and knocks aside the differences. And I guess that's what governments like to do, is divide people, separate people, categorize people. But the arts and culture brings them all together, and that's what I speak about.
That's so well said. Yes, that art is how we all come together. I mean, listening to your music made us view the world in new ways and ways. Hey, I grew up in, you know, near the cornfields, just a half hour outside of Frederick, and listening to Public Enemy was like a mind-blowing experience. But to your point, art is what brings different backgrounds together. So yeah, if our listeners in Frederick turn out, you know, Frederick's an interesting cross-section of different backgrounds. But if we come out to the Weinberg Center tonight, what all topics are you going to speak on? Maybe beyond, you said the importance of the arts, but, you know, is there any other current, you know, political, social topics you might dive into?
Well, you know, rap-based reality and technology have been always my strong points. The technology thing has really been a heavy part of it because, I mean, look, people listen to your radio show, they kind of watch it maybe now through their phones. That didn't happen 25 years ago. So technology is one of those things I think that we have to, as human beings, learn how to manage before it masters us. You got things like AI coming. The reason I talk about these things is because these gadgets and the technologies is what they receive arts and culture through, as well as political discord and this and that or whatever. I try to always stay apart from that, but I always try to talk about it, about how it needs to be accountable to people, responsible to people. I'm not a political conversationalist. However, it's in our waters. So if somebody feels that I'm pro or con anything, I'm like, nah, I'm just about, you know, people being equal, and especially where I come from as Black folks, being able to be in a land that says everybody's equal based on their character instead of their characteristics, and just making, like Dr. King said, the truth be accountable to the paper.
So well said. Waking up from Dr. King's dream all these years later, and it always bugs me how the word woke, it seems like it started out as a positive thing to me. It means you're just awake to injustices of society and waking up to history that maybe we weren't taught in the history books. Hell, I just learned about the Tulsa Race Massacre a few years ago. I can't believe I was never learned that in freaking school. But what's your take on that word? I feel like it's been used as like a catch-all to anything that makes anyone uncomfortable. But to me, it's just being awake. I don't know. What do you think?
Right. So, you know, most people, you know, well, anyway, the term really woke is just being the opposite of being sleep, walking around sleep, not being aware, not paying attention. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so woke is just being able to be aware and be and paying attention to your surroundings, challenge information, like I said, and don't believe the hype. You want to challenge information. It doesn't say that, oh, I don't believe it just because your emotion says it. Oh, I believe it just because, you know, your opinion is based on how you're feeling that day. You know, factors has to, you know, be researched, has to be examined. Matter of fact, talk left or right about it and looked into it, and it's pretty much undebatable. So, but that takes work and it takes effort. And it really doesn't take much effort to just walk around sleep.
Yeah, a lot of people don't want to challenge themselves and do the work because, like you're saying, it's a little harder to push your comfort zones. And a lot of people, it's just easier to kind of walk around asleep. But we're urging people in this speaker series and in this interview to, you know, hopefully, you know, to expand their horizons here a little bit.
You got people in the United States sometimes that feel like something should be done for them. And there's a lot of privilege going around where USAers, people in the United States, just think that somebody else is going to do the work. And I think we have to get out of that mindset and come into saying, instead of me, we got to be in about we.
Absolutely. I agree entirely.
You don't have to agree. That's another thing. What my conversation, I'm going to call them lectures because I'm not lecturing anybody. Yeah. It's a conversation that tells people, like, you know, don't be a robot. Be in full control of yourself. If your opinion about, you know, something, you just stand by it as long as it doesn't like impede somebody's life and things like that. So it's important.
Well, thanks for clarifying that, because yes, if you're listening to this and whatever side of the political aisle you think you're on, come out to this speaker series and hear Chuck D, because it's all about expanding how you look at the world. And, you know, we're not telling you what to do. Be your own thinker, but consider all the info. Yeah. You're talking about technology's changing everything. You once said that hip hop was sort of like the invisible TV station that Black America never had, and it's like a new medium at the time. And now it's sort of taken over the world. Hip hop, arguably the biggest thing out there. But yeah, I mean, talk about sort of the role of that genre specifically in providing this alternate medium here.
Well, I was saying that especially in the 80s, because anytime you saw Black folks, if it wasn't sports or entertainment, you didn't see us or hear us at all, unless if there was a trouble or problem in our community, where there always happened to be. And that would be the only thing that would become front page news. It would be the only thing that would become national news. And so hip hop and rap kind of like talked about a lot of those different intricate details and dynamics. And I just thought that, you know, you can feel where we were coming from as even though you didn't see us all the time in all these diverse areas of life.
Totally. And I want to, you're talking about sort of back then, and I'd love to sort of paint sort of your superhero origin story as well. You grew up in the time, you know, nowadays kids, you know, we watch Black Panther, but back then you were back when those comic books were first coming out and everything. So yeah, so you were born in Long Island in 60. So you grew up at a time. I mean, mm-hmm. we think now is a crazy time, and it is for many reasons. But man, the decade you grew up in, you saw JFK, RFK, Malcolm X, MLK. You saw Black Panther leaders. You saw all these people getting assassinated. So
Vietnam War, all those things all happened in one snowball. Yep. I have Negro on my birth certificate, and we became colored. And all of a sudden, by the end of the 60s, Black was beautiful. So, yeah, that was something that helped shape me.
Wow, that's crazy that the lexicon even changes as well, and what's acceptable. Well, how did you actually meet Flavor Flav then? Wasn't it you were DJ Chucky D at the time, the pre-Public Enemy, at Adelphi University? Yeah. Did Flav wear a clock around his neck even on campus, like to get to class on time? What was the early days?
No. I mean, it was a style that Long Island kids wore in 1986. And then with the beginning of Public Enemy, he and I wore clocks to let people know what time it is, as opposed to wearing, you know, gold chains and things that, you know, kids couldn't afford and we couldn't afford either. You know, so that's how the clock thing started. I took my clocks off a couple years later and kept his clocks.
I like it. And wasn't it like a demo you had done as DJ Chucky D? You'd done Public Enemy number one, and that did that catch the ear of Rick Rubin for that first album? Yo, Bum Wrote the Show in 87.
And it wasn't really a demo to do records; it was actually a promo to get more people to listen to our radio station. So I guess it was a demo. It ended up as being something that happened to be our first record, so it worked that way in a weird way, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that first album put you on the map, but it really was that second one, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back in 88. That, to me, I mean, I would think I would consider that like the big more mainstream breakthrough where everybody now knows Public Enemy. Gosh, there's so many big hits on that, but like Bring the Noise, Flav starts with the Yeah Boy, and you announce bass right off the front, hit us in the face. You got Rebel Without a Pause on that. Which has that, what would you even call that, like wonderfully weird, like record squeal sound in the background? What would you even call that? The
a call to justice, a call to alarm, let's bring the noise, you know. And then the Rebel Without a Pause is just like, you know, we're just not going to stop, we're going to keep on to the break of dawn.
I love it. And Don't Believe the Hype, of course, was on that too. Was that sort of a like a clap back at any media criticism? I know, what's the line? Used abuse,
it was,
clues. I refused to blow a fuse. They even had it on the news.
Well, it was like, you know, journalists kind of looked at all hip hop as noise and kind of made the assessment on it. And I was telling people challenge information and don't just take it at word value coming at you and just accept it just because it's coming through a screen. But here we are in 2024. We all screen ages today, so we got to work on that too right now here.
Oh my gosh, totally. Well, speaking of the screen, be remiss if we don't mention Fight the Power. That was on the Do the Right Thing on the screen on the soundtrack there in 89, The Number, Another Summer. Talk about the song itself, man. You guys went balls to the wall at No Fear, calling out Elvis and John Wayne, and Most of My Heroes Don't Appear on No Stamps. Like, for a lot of us, I'm saying white folks, you can be like, wow, you can call out those folks? And it got me, I'll speak for myself, to consider in another way. Like, wait a minute, what did Eminem say? To do black music so selfish and use it to get myself wealthy. Like, you were the first that made me even ponder that. But yeah, talk about sort of the guts to just go out and speak stuff that hadn't really been spoken like that in that song.
Well, I mean, Spike Lee, you know, through film and movies and the big screen, was able to make a statement, and he was looking for a soundtrack to his statement, and therefore the theme of the movies is like how a community restaurant that was also in the community serving the people food didn't reflect that on the wall. So it was almost like, yeah, we're part of the community, but we're not, because there's no black people on the wall. So, you know, we're providing a service, but at the same time, we don't consider you as equal as these people on the wall. Hence, the Fight the Power, the Elvis and John Wayne point was really kind of talking about like, okay, you know, this answers the people that are not on the wall. You know, most of my heroes don't appear on the stamp, nor are they on Sal's wall.
Sal's Pizzeria had Sinatra and all the Italian, which are legends, obviously. But where's all? Yeah, where's Bugging Out's heroes on there? Yeah, exactly. Just that movie itself, man. Not only the opening sequence with the dance and your song, but the montage of the racial epithets, you know, all the different backgrounds calling each other out until Samuel L. Jackson says, you know, y'all need, you know, double truth, Ruth, take a chill. The death of Radio Raheem, Mookie throwing that trash can in the riot at the end, the juxtaposed quotes of MLK and Malcolm at the end. Man, it is a piece of work. I believe that was the Obama's first date night, right? Like, that's 20 years later. He gets inaugurated, literally 89 to 2009. So do you and Spike ever get together and say, hey, we might have inspired the first black president with that?
We don't talk about that. Every once in a while, we'll probably talk about the Knicks.
Yeah, they poor Ewing and Starks. Those teams were great, but they ran into the Jordan buzzsaw every time, man.
Yeah, hey. Well, that was then, so here we are.
Here we are now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
So that was on the Do the Right Thing, Fight the Power was on there, but and then you brought it, actually put it on the third album, Fear of the Black Planet in 90. I have to ask you about 911 as a joke. I know Flavor Flav takes the lead on the mic in that one. You know, I dialed 911 a long time ago.
That was great. That was great that Flavor Flav took the lead. And matter of fact, coincidentally, two of my favorite, you know, people about records and albums out now, you know, Flavor Flav has a record called Everywhere Man that myself and Sam Hollander, you know, and Rhiannon Ellis wrote for him. He's everywhere. He's doing a great job. He's probably done, with the help of AI, the world's first multi-language rap song. And also the debut of Stetsasonic, new album Here We Go Again. And those are the artists that inspired me when they made the Africa song in 1986 and just was one of the greatest groups ever. So they got their unsung segment. So, you know, here we are. So Flav, when he did 911 as a joke, we was making, you know, Fear of a Black Planet. And I gave him a year to write a song. And I said, listen, you got to write this song about how the services, when they come to save us in our community, they're always late or they don't come at all. Yeah. And Flav took it, wrote it for a year, came back, and I was shocked. And I said, this is a single right here. And he did a masterful job on it.
Absolutely. And you got to remember when, you know, all these years later, looking, we got to remember what time period that was in, too. I guess NWA had just done, you know, F the Police in 88. But this was before KRS-One Sound of the Police, which was like 93 or something. So you were in the middle of that. But this right before Rodney King and that LAPD beatdown, not to mention, you know, then that would go in. O.J. Simpson just died. But like that would go into the Mark Furman and all the distrust of the police that sort of led to that verdict. I mean, that's a whole other story. But
911 dealt with the delay of services coming in to look at us as equal people. It didn't go into the thing of the police brutality as much or anything. It hinted at that. Anti-nigger machine is probably the one that dealt directly with that. But 911 is a joke. It's like whether you're sick or whether you had an incident, you know, authorities are going to be late, especially back then. They were going to be late to the cause. I think the biggest difference now is that we have a lot of people from the community as part of the services. So they're a little quicker because they know they got to be accountable because you got people right in the services who are working. Back then, that wasn't a normal thing.
He has more first responders than brutality, but you did deal with that. And by the way, there will be folks coming to Frederick Weinberg. I mean, hell, I got old childhood friends and baseball coaches who are now police officers that might come to this show. And it's all about fair policing, folks. We want it reflected in the community. And now we got this powerful tool of cell phones in our hand that can capture the George Floyds and stuff today.
So, well, you want people from the community to also be able to employ people, protect people.
Yep.
You want them to be able to educate people. People have to have a knowledge of self. So that's what you call fair policing. When somebody grows up in the community and they feel that they're accountable for the community, and they treat everybody, you know, equally instead of living somewhere else, coming in and like, you know, like they're part of the militia to not police people, but to go around and be like an overseer. That doesn't work.
Right, right, exactly. Not a George Zimmerman coming in and stalking the Trayvon. You need to be reflective of the actual community that's living there. And it's just about fairness. Maybe time for one more song, because Shut 'Em Down was my first, like, I think that's like the catchiest one. I probably jammed the hardest when I was growing up. That was off of Apocalypse 91, Enemy Strikes Back, fourth album.
That album was a lot of fun too, you know.
I love how hard you come out of the gate with "I testify, my mama cried, black people die when the other man," like, it comes right out. But what was it? What were you critiquing at the time? Was it about like big corporations like Nike not giving back to the community or opening business in black areas, or what was that?
Well, you know, I mean, we were just not consumers, and in order, if you're gonna sell to the community, you got to be aware. It's like sometimes when I used to ask people, I said, "Well, do you love hip hop?" They said, "Yeah, I love hip hop. Do you love black people?" And they're like, what's that got to do with it? I'm like, well, it got a little bit to do with it, that you know, you at least should be concerned about the conditions of the people that this thing has come up out of. Yes, it's a party thing. Yes, it could be a thing where you nod your head in your car to it or whatever, but have some kind of concern. And I think those people that checked out Public Enemy, they did, you know. Some of it was uneasy, but this is, you know, some of the things that make people come together. You got to sometimes break the ice. And I don't think we broke the ice in a belligerent way. There's not anything from Public Enemy that you could point to say we directly went at, you know, human beings. You know, we went after systems. We went after the isms. We went after structures. And that's what we did. We was very clear on that.
Oh, and some of the best to ever do it, with that political social consciousness to the lyrics, to go after the isms, and catchy at the same time, might I add.
Well, you're making songs, so you know you better be catchy. It's not like you're putting out dissertations and
right.
Or
speaker series, you know. Yeah. Hey, I want to, but before final seconds, though, I want to say congrats. I mean, it's been over 10 years now, but you will forever be, you know, one of the first hip hop groups to enter the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, breaking down other doors. I guess it was what, Grandmaster Flash, Run DMC, and Beasties, and then Public Enemy. So that puts you on the first four, the quote Mount Rushmore of hip hop pioneers. How now a ton of rappers have gotten in, but. Talk about how big of a deal that is. I know most people don't care about those life accolades. It's more about the music. But, you know, I think for another generation coming up, the genre breaking down, some artists rock, others roll. I think it works for me. But was that a big honor?
Yeah. I mean, anytime that you're revered and noticed for your works, you should be honored to respect that. You know, I'm not saying we hang ourselves on those laurels, but hip hop and rap music comes out of the understanding and the use and the knowledge of the shoulders that we all stand on. That means great music, great musicians, record labels, great genres across the board. Hip hop is just like a total combination of all those aspects of music. You see Beyonce come up with a country Carter, and it shows just how it's music, you know. And people that used to say, "Hey, you know, Public Enemy is not rock." I said, "Yeah, but rap is the role, baby." So that's the thing that you know, and you know, we don't say it's just about ourselves. To the people that's on the outside looking in, we share this with Ice-T. We share it with Eric B. Rakim, KRS-One, people in our peer group that deserve a piece of this just like we do. So Public Enemy is not an individual. It's sort of an embracing movement.
Yeah, and thanks for saying that. I've always said the same to our listeners for, like, I don't know, 10 years, that there's the rock and there's the roll. And there's tons of non-quote-unquote rock acts in there long before hip-hop was. I mean, R&B, country, and all that was in there, too. So it's just music, pictures
and
on the
wall. And I also like to say, also sharing with Anthrax, you know?
Yeah.
Who was one of my teachers. And Dougie Fresh, you know, Dougie Fresh and Anthrax and Houdini are three acts that taught me, you know, the best way about going with it, especially Run DMC and JMJ.
Well, think about it too. Prophets of Rage, that had Rage Against the Machine and Audio Slave and Cypress Hill and Public Enemy. So there's rock and rap all together there. So,
well, the greatest group right now is Cypress Hill and DJ Lord, Public Enemy, now DJs with Cypress Hill. Yeah. I just did a project with Mixmaster Mike the other day. So it's all interrelated. And Prophets of Rage was 2016 to 2020, but we still do our thing. Our movement is in records and videos that existed, and the meaning of of why we did it and what we was trying to set out to do. I don't know if we'll ever physically do something together, but whenever you're talking about music, arts, and culture, the door is always open. It's not like you're an athlete that have a cutoff date.
Absolutely. Well, we'll fortunately have to do a cutoff date on this because you've been more than generous with your time. I could talk to you all day, but you've been so generous.
I appreciate it.
Wrap it back around. Chuck D, Public Enemy, coming to the Weinberg Center in Frederick, Maryland, part of the Frederick Speaker Series. Anything you want to leave them with? You know, invite them on out. What, you know, tell them to keep their ears attuned as you drop some knowledge tonight.
Yeah, it's Rap, Race, Reality, Technology, and looking forward to do it. And trying to figure out what my first couple of lines going to be. That's all.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Hey, welcome to Frederick. I appreciate you stopping by town.
Thank you. I appreciate this interview and thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.